we do have a forum.
Thank you, and good morning, good evening. Welcome to the Monroe City Council meeting for May 10th, 2016. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. And Ms. Smoot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Cutaback, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Scarborough.
Thank you. And Councilmember Hanford announced that he would not be here this evening. He made that announcement last week. And then I received a phone call from Councilmember Rasmussen. He is out ill today and did not make the Snohomish Health District or will be making our meeting tonight. So he is out ill. Without objection, we'll consider both of them as excused.
Mayor.
All right. Yes.
Mayor, I have an 8:15 hard stop tonight.
8:15 hard stop.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Councilmember Gamble, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, and indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on the agenda this evening is a public hearing. This is the first item and the only item under public hearing. This is AB 16058, resolution number 006-2016, declaring certain property as surplus and authorizing disposition. Its disposition. Mr. Feilberg, is this you this evening?
Yes, thank you, sir.
Yes.
Included in your council packet, there is a list of equipment that is surplus to the needs of the city, either through age, it's worn out, or it's obsolete, or we've replaced it with something else. It comes from a variety of departments, things like pickup trucks, the skate park equipment, trolling motors, a cover, some mowers, a phone system, things like that. And those are all surplus to our needs. Some of these items are owned by the utilities. They are required to have a public hearing, so that's why we're having a public hearing for that. And after the public hearing is held, council has questions that try to answer them, and we're asking for you to pass a resolution declaring the surplus and so the city can dispose of them.
Okay. Thank you. So without objection, we'll move into the public hearing. Is there anybody that would like to give testimony this evening during the public hearing? Okay, nobody's signed up. Is anybody interested in coming forward and giving testimony? All right, seeing none, Councilmember Cutaback.
Move to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
We have a first to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing from Councilmember Cutaback and a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oh.
That's just the motion.
Aye. Good? Okay. Aye.
Okay. All right. So the ayes have it. Five to zero. The public testimony portion of the public hearing is now closed. Council, is there a motion to close the public hearing? Councilmember Camp.
Move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay. A motion from Councilmember Camp to close the public hearing and a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Scarborough.
Brad, so this list of things that are up for surplus, do you have a sale or you just get, how do you get rid of
them? It depends on what it is. Lots of stuff goes to an auction house we have a contract with. There's a website that allows, it's a public works website for excess equipment that goes out there. We put some of the stuff on there, and some of it we're going to use for trade-ins to buy new equipment.
Hmm. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? All right, so we do have a motion to close a public hearing on the table. Second, any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Cutaback.
I'm going to make a motion.
We haven't voted on the closure of the public hearing yet.
Oh, we haven't done that. I thought we did. Okay.
No. Okay. Seeing none, no more discussion on it. All in favor of closing the public hearing, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 5-0. Councilmember Cutaback.
Now I will make a motion. Move to approve resolution number 006-2016, declaring certain real property as surplus and authorizing its disposition.
Second.
Okay, Councilmember Cutterback has moved to approve resolution 006-2016, declaring certain real property as surplus and authorizing its disposition. We have a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is under announcements and presentations. This is a presentation on the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau from Miss Amy Spain. Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you so much.
And I'd like to acknowledge that we also have Tammy Dunn in the audience from our Sports Commission. Thank you both for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you, and I'll actually invite Tammy up to make some comments in a few moments. So thank you for the opportunity to be before you today. I've got a lot of information, so just like last year, I'm going to go through it pretty quickly, and then we can address your questions as we get towards the end here. So I'm pleased to announce that there was an increase in tourism spending in 2015. The Dean Runyon and Associates is the organization that for the last 20 years has done the economic impact studies for Washington State, including Snohomish County. And visitor spending topped $20 billion in 2015, accounting for over $1 billion in local and state tax revenues. So that's $1.2 billion that you and I as residents don't have to pay into our state coffers. Tourism also employs over 170,000 people statewide. So this diagram is showing the people coming into our community through a variety of transportation mechanisms, and here's where they spend all of their money. Whether they're attending meetings, they're going to recreational events, they're shopping, they're in our restaurants, etc. And those purchases provide the taxes to support the infrastructure that residents enjoy, as well as employing people. And in Washington State, as I said, over 170,000 people employed by tourism. We still do not have a state tourism office. I won't take a lot of time tonight to discuss this. But look for me this fall as the Washington Tourism Alliance and the tourism industry as a whole is starting to beef up again to have those discussions at our state legislature in 2017 in hopes of having the state tourism program funded. This is the 2013 to 2015 biennial budget, and you can see this David and Goliath situation. And in fact, in 2016, we received $0, so we have $0 coming into our state tourism program other than through their membership. The assessment that we are working towards is to reach a $7.5 million budget. That, as you can see from this slide, doesn't really make us competitive, but at least it gets us in the game. And so that's what we're looking for, a starting point. The industries will self-assess and will determine that method of assessment. And these are the five industry sectors that are going to be included in that initial campaign. So the impact of travel to Washington State, this is a snapshot of what that travel party looks like. 2.2 people, they stay 2.5 nights, and they spend over $470 per travel party per day. In Snohomish County, it's a little bit different. So we have 2.1 people per travel party. They stay 2.1 nights, and they spend $360 per travel party per day. And those are folks staying in the commercial lodging. The Tourism Bureau and the Sports Commission is really focused on bringing people from far enough away that they have to stay overnight. And this slide is the reason why. Not that day travelers aren't important. Your festival and event organizers don't much care unless they receive lodging tax dollars to assist them whether those people are staying overnight or not. But the impact to the community as a whole, as you can see, is four times as great for an overnight traveler. And not just because they're staying in hotels. As you see from this slide, the hotels are the third largest recipient of that visitor dollar. So transportation and restaurants receive a larger share of the visitor dollar than do hotels. But that economic impact is felt throughout your community at your retail outlets, at recreation restaurants, as I said, as well as grocery stores. So in Snohomish County, we employ over 10,000 people directly in tourism, and the visitor spend leaves $21.1 million right here in Snohomish County. I'll be addressing each one of these bullet points briefly for you, but we are reporting on the request for information that we received from our advertising. We saw a small increase, 3% increase in our website visitation. We had an 8% increase in the media coverage that we received. Our group sales as of December 31st, 2015, had represented over $44 million of economic impact. Our visitors served over 38,000 people, and I'm pleased to report that tourism in Snohomish County topped $1 billion in 2015, although it was only roughly 2% increase. Reaching that billion-dollar mark is something to celebrate. As measures of success of our industry or the health of our industry, we look at occupancy, average daily rate, which is ADR, and RevPAR, or revenue per available room. And we actually saw a decrease in occupancy in our hotels in 2015. There were a couple of things at play. We had four new hotels coming into the market in 2014, while demand was flat. And then we saw the decrease of the Canadian dollar to the U.S. dollar, and our hotels and our attractions are definitely feeling that. So the Canadians are not staying as long, they're not coming down as much, not spending as much as they did when the dollar was more at par. Another measure of the industry is the hotel motel tax collections, and those were up a very healthy, almost 13%. So in our groups, sales efforts, and that includes our sports sales as well as convention and group tour market, we have advertising that helped to define Snohomish County as a visitor destination. We are active in going out to trade shows. At those trade shows, we're meeting directly with meeting and event planners, and we bring those leads back to our hotels and attractions and to the community. We distribute information, whether that be a meeting facility guide, a group tour guide, visitor guide, so depending on the event planner that we're working with. We attend trade shows in a variety of market segments, so again, the package travel or bus tours, sports marketing. We only do one consumer travel show, and that's primarily because we can't show the ROI on that, and our hotel community and our lodging tax funding source of the county are very focused on proving ROI. We can say how many guides we distributed, but because we're not a booking agency, we can't say that generated X number of room nights, and so we only do one. And our meeting and events, these would be your conventions and special events. In addition to the trade shows, we also go on sales missions, and we invite members of the community to join us, and we are going to communities that are our lead generators or those target geographic markets that are bringing groups into our county in, again, both the sports and group tour and meeting and events. And those leads are also distributed and shared with our hotels and attractions. Not only do we go out, but we invite people in. So 18 different tours were conducted in 2015 with those meeting and event planners or their sports development directors to show them the fields, the convention centers, the attractions that they can come for their events. So this slide is really where the rubber meets the road. The yellow column is the total definite and tentative room nights as of December 31st in each of those years. You'll see that big jump from 2013 to 2014, and that was largely due to the success that we've had in adding a salesperson. That was afforded to us by the Tourism Promotion Area Fund. Now you do see a little bit of a drop between 2014 and 15 in regards to room nights booked. That's due to events that are not annual or cyclical, so specific room gymnastics or some of those big events that don't come back every year. We see a bump as a result of those bookings. But the economic impact remains strong, and again, seeing that big jump from 2013 to 2014, we actually hired that additional staff person in 2012, but because we are booking two and three and more years out, it takes a couple of years to realize that. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Tammy, and she's going to talk a little bit about the sports program. And before I do so, I just wanted to clarify, the Snohomish County Sports Commission is the sports division of the Tourism Bureau. So we're the same organization, but we brand our sports department as Sports Commission. So with that, I'll introduce Tammy Dunn.
Good.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk more about our sports and the economic impact that we have. For 2015, it generated $35.6 million in economic impact, and Monroe is a huge player in the economic impact with the sports events. I want to say it's probably the community that hosts the most sports events year in and year out. Last year we had the NSA Western World Series Girls Fast Pitch, which we had not had for 6 years, and Monroe was a great location for it. It had the opening ceremonies as well at Sky River Park, and just the partnerships made it a great success. Another one is the Tri-Monroe Triathlon, which is a USA Triathlon Youth and Junior Elite, and this year we'll be back for the sixth year. So there's a lot of annual events, and there's quite a few of them up there, even local Legends Baseball Club, which is a local club. So the city of Monroe really plays a huge partner in with what we do, and we greatly appreciate that with the partnerships that we have. Our sports commission, we do have board of directors. They assist with our staff with resources and oversight, and we have leaders in the community that are from the Parks Department, the hoteliers, business leaders, as well as school districts, and those are the ones that have our facilities, as well as their leaders in the sports and understanding the sports with what we need to do and help us. Our sports commission, we have been recognized many years in a row with Sports Events Magazine as a Reader Choice Award. We five-time winner. I think it's 5 times in a row. And also kudos and great recognition to Mike Farrell. He was also recognized nationally as a Sports Events Magazine as a Parks and Recreation Award winner. Mike is a phenomenal partner, his staff with the City of Monroe, with what we do, and we couldn't do it without him, so thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And then also, we were selected for the first time as champions of economic impact of sports tourism, and that is through another national publication, Sports Destination Management, and that is for our efforts with the USU Soccer Region 4 President's Cup that Snohomish Youth Soccer Club hosted in at Soccer Fields last June. And I'll turn it back over to Amy.
And the reason Tammy's turning it back over to me is she's too humble to read this slide. But I'm very proud to announce that Tammy received 2 national recognitions in 2015. The National Association of Sports Commissions gave her the Game Changer Award, and she was the inaugural recipient of another national award of women in sports tourism. So I wanted to recognize Tammy tonight. So thanks again, Tammy, for your work. Moving from our group sales to our leisure travel, again, we have ads in a variety of publications that are reaching our target market that we've determined through research, and you can see the consistent branding that we use throughout. More and more online advertising. Most of our print publications have an online presence, and so we have that, of course, but we're also using banner ads, retargeting ads on Facebook. It's kind of big brother stuff. When someone comes to our website, then we can track them and we serve them up ads and messaging when they're on other sites. So we're doing more and more of that online. We also have a number of electronic newsletters, a visitor newsletter, our Visitor Information Center newsletter, an industry newsletter called Tourism Today that's sent pretty much to folks just within Snohomish County, and then our Sports Quarterly, in addition to a Sports Spotlight, which I don't have a picture of up here. So 5 industry electronic newsletters that we send out to targeted messaging, to targeted audiences. Our website visitation was up 3%. In addition to our regular website, we have this snohomishcountylife.com. That is specific for that segment. So they have chauffeurs and caterers and bakeries and florists and those kinds of things that generally a visitor to the county doesn't need. So we have a specialized website for that. And our Rooms at Par or Stay Shop and Stay program is an off-season discount lodging program. We developed a new brochure this year. Some of these samples are in the packets that I left for you. Our East County Backroads attractions, where we showed some visitors some ways to get and explore East County along Highway 2 and accessing off of Highway 2 to get into the communities a little bit more. We published a new hiking guide, which has both urban and rural hikes. and a golf in Snohomish County guide internally. We also continue to have our seasonal visitor guide, a spring, summer, and a fall, winter issue so that we can focus on events that are taking place during that season, as well as articles written by travel writers highlighting attractions and events and things to do in our community that are seasonal in nature. Our public relations program includes a bi-monthly storyline mailed to electronically mailed to travel writers, and we talk about either newsworthy things, new hotel openings, or new attractions, new exhibits, those kinds of things, or we just thematically package some of the attractions in the county to give reasons for those travel writers to write about things to do here. We also bring travel writers into our community and take them out on familiarization tours as part of that. We send press releases, we make desktop media pitches, and as a result, we had 56 articles published from those efforts, totaling almost $300,000 of free media coverage. We're very active in social media, 5 different Facebook pages so that we can segment and give specific messaging, as well as Instagram, Flickr, Twitter, and we have over 40 Pinterest boards, which is a growing search engine as well. We have 18 videos on YouTube, and those are segmented by different types of attractions and activities, so they're searchable also. And we were on television. We had 3 television ads. One ad highlighting our aviation assets, one our outdoor recreation, and one our shopping. Our visitor service program continues to have the brick and mortar visitor information centers with our partnerships in East County, in the city of Snohomish, South County, in the city of Linwood, and also at the Future Flight Aviation Center and Boeing Tour. But the strategic tourism plan that was adopted by the county council in 2011 asked us to be more prevalent in the shopping destinations. And so we have a traditional advertising at Alderwood Mall in one of their panels, and this is ambient advertising, where we put out some Adirondack chairs and a stack of our visitor guides here and invited people to sit down and just learn more about Snohomish County to extend their stays, and that is at Everett Mall. We also are going digital. We have digital kiosks at the Linwood Convention Center, at the Future Flight and Boeing Tour, and also at the Tulalip Resort in their lobby. So again, these kiosks are not necessarily driving overnight stays for that visit, but giving instant information to visitors that are already here, hoping to extend their stay or give them reasons to come back another time. We take our Visitor Information Center on the road and operate at events and festivals around the county, and those change out every year. This is a snapshot of who visits the brick and mortar Visitor Information Center. So about 25% from the local area, that includes King and Skagit County, and roughly 75% from more than 50 miles away. So those would be what you would identify as bona fide visitors because they're coming from more than 50 miles away. But the folks that we're serving locally is a good thing too. Those people are coming to our Visitor Information Centers because they've got friends and family coming to visit, and we would rather they stay in Snohomish County than take them outside. Our volunteer program is very active, and in addition to the festivals and events, we also do some community support. So the Ironman is an example with an event that our sports team was involved in bringing, and we're there at their registration table giving out visitor information, also just supporting some businesses, the Snohomish Health Expo, Verdant Health Open House, AAA Store Open House, etc. We do conduct industry education. Sometimes it's a relatively generic type of topic, like how to work with the media or whether you should be doing social media and how to do that. Because many of our tourism businesses are small businesses, the owner is the River Raptor, is the marketing department, is the accounting department, etc., and they don't have access to some training, so we added a managing employee performance program for those small businesses last year as well. For our industry education, we do want to make sure the frontline workers know about the attractions throughout the county. So we have a couple of programs. One, a monthly hot sheet that we identify events that are taking place within that 30-day period, just so that they're aware and top of mind. And then we also have an industry education month tour where we secure free tickets for our attractions and events so the frontline worker can go experience that. So when they get those questions from their visitors, they have personal information to share rather than just handing them a visitor guide. So again, business was pretty good for us in 2015. We saw increases in our website visitation, in our media coverage, in our group sales economic impact. Tourism spending results were up, again, topping $1 billion for the first time in 2015. And although the hotel occupancy dipped a little bit in the fourth quarter, which resulted in an overall 2% down for the year, they were able to hold their rate integrity, largely due to the rates going up and up and up in Seattle. And so we're, as our hotels in our community, are able to keep their rates higher as well. And again, the motel tax collection seeing a very healthy increase. So just a couple of notes about 2016 initiatives that I thought you might particularly be interested in. We've been hosting a series of rural tourism workshops in eastern Snohomish County and in north Snohomish County. So in the Skyclomish-Snohomish River Valley, we've had five of the six workshops have already been completed. We have our final workshop at the end of May, working with all the communities along Highway 2 to talk about what their tourism vision is for themselves. What is that thing that they can hold their hats on? Where is the infrastructure development needs? Where are those gaps? What training do they need to help secure those kinds of travelers? And so we're just about wrapping up with those tourism workshops, and then action teams will be formed as a result. Other things that we've done in 2016, different from 2015, just increased advertising in a number of event-related publications, meaning the group event publications. We are in the process of expanding the capacity of our website to add itineraries and really in a storytelling format to talk about not just the attractions that why somebody might come to Snohomish County, but how to piece them together and create those itineraries for them. Much more internet advertising, and again, for our meetings and events market, we've added a few trade shows. So with that all closed, just reminding you that tourism is economic development. We have nearly 11,000 people employed directly in tourism in Snohomish County, and that visitor spending leaves over $21 million of taxes right here in our county. And with that, Tammy and I are happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
First, congratulations on the award. That is very well deserved. And Mike, you too. That's wonderful. So this is great stuff. It's a lot of information. And you guys do your job very well. So I just have a couple of questions. On that very first slide, I know that on your last slide, you said it was a 1.8% increase to $1 billion in tourism dollars for Snohomish County.
Yeah.
On one of your first slides, you, I think, had overall for the state.
Yes.
And you said it was the largest. What was the increase for the state?
It was, as I recall, about 3%. About 3% increase, 3.7% increase.
Okay.
It was an increase, however, it was not it didn't increase at the same rate that our sales tax revenues are increasing. So this is the when you're looking at why do we need a state tourism office, we saw an increase. Well, yes, but it's not increasing at the same rate as other growth sectors in our state, and nor are we keeping pace with our surrounding states. So their tourism is growing at a faster rate than is Washington State. So
it might be an opportunity.
Absolutely.
And that leads to my next question. You had a slide where it had, I think our budget was 400-something million in other states. $407,000 other states had a $12 million budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, if you can give me some reference. So,
this was the 2013 to 15, because Washington State works off of a biennium budget. So, we had roughly $500,000 over the two-year period that was from state general fund.
Okay.
As interim funding, because the state pulled all tourism funding in 2011, which was when the Washington Tourism Alliance was formed, which is a membership organization that really was just the catcher's mitt to collect those assets when the state tourism office closed. So it's keeping the website open. And that's about it. Right now we have, the only funding is through the membership, and that's all that we can do with that. There's no outside marketing, there's no advertising, there's no trade shows, there's no, if a visitor calls Washington State and wants a state guide, they have to send the money to pay for postage.
So in kind of comparison, mm-hmm. So we spent about $500,000 over the 2 years.
The others are annual budget.
And so, you know, Oregon, $12 million a year?
Yes.
And what do they generate in tourism dollars?
Oh, good question. I don't have that data with me.
Because for me, I think that's where you kind of look at the ROI. You
right.
look at, okay, if we can... Not saying I wouldn't want us to increase it because there
right.
could be opportunity, but if we're spending $500,000 in 2 years and raising $20 billion,
right.
and they're spending $12 million a year in raising $20
billion, right.
that's where that might be the rub, kind of going, we want an increase mm-hmm. in the budget, but when you look at other states,
mm-hmm.
are we doing just as well spending less, or are we doing better?
I
don't know.
The short answer is we're not.
Okay.
The ROI studies, and there have been a number of them around the country, show that the return on investment for visitor spending, or excuse me, the return on investment in visitor spending from state budgets is anywhere from, for every dollar spent, they get a $3 return, up to $25 return. So they're seeing at least three times their investment in
And then another question you had were...
And add one more point. The other thing that we have going for us is that many of our counties have enacted business improvement districts or tourism promotion area funds and those kinds of things. So when you look at what the spend is by all the individual counties, and we've never received state funding. None of the county or city destination marketing organizations.
That's not included in that.
Not included
okay.
in that. So we're continuing to do that.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Seattle Bureau has over a $20 million budget just for Seattle.
Okay.
So they're really carrying
the state
to a large extent.
Where are people staying in Snohomish County? You had the kind of the rooms, you know,
mm-hmm.
the occupancy.
Yeah.
Where's the majority of that happening?
It's all over the state, all over the county, depending on the event. So as Tammy was reporting, for the sporting events that we do so much of in Monroe, they're staying in the Monroe hotels. If they're attending an event at Linwood Convention Center, then they're staying at Linwood hotels. If it's a really a large event, the National Softball Association, Western World Series as an example, they stayed in hotels in just about every community in the county because they were utilizing fields all over the place. So it just depends on the event, the purpose for their trip.
Okay. And then you had a slide where it showed that that we received free media coverage.
Yes.
What is that?
So it's an industry standard to how do you base when we host a travel writer and we take them out and about, and then they write an article in Sunset Magazine, which, by the way, there's one coming out, Sunset Magazine, in July. We host them. They write about us. So if we were to, and it's a full-page article, say, and so the industry standard to put a measurement on that is if we were to take an ad, that same full-size page ad, what would that have cost us in that publication? So that's where we get that dollar value to say a full-page article is the equivalency of a full-page ad, and that would have cost us $4,000 or whatever that number might be. And so we keep track of all of that to the extent that we're able. We get more media coverage than we're able to track.
Right.
But that we're able to track, that's how we determine that measurement.
Okay.
Great question.
Well, just one last one. You had a bunch of newsletters, e-news,
yes.
and social media stuff, and that's wonderful. How do people go up, sign? How do you determine who to send that to, and how do people sign up for that? If they just come in our state or come in our county and they're new to it,
Like, how did that get to them eventually?
Okay, so a couple of different ways. They're opt-in, so if someone goes onto our website, they have an opportunity right on our website to sign in or sign up to receive the electronic newsletters, and those are quarterly visitor newsletters. Then we supplement it once a month of just events that are taking place. The tourism industry newsletter, we kind of try to find anybody in the county that wants to receive that. So those are hotel general managers and directors of sales, restaurant owners, retail owners, mall managers, anybody in the industry that wants to keep their finger on the pulse.
Do the hotels have the ability, like when someone comes and registers for a room, to sign people up for that right there?
That's not something currently being done.
That would be an easy thing if hotels all signed up to do that, and just as part of the registration, people could sign up for the tourism newsletter right there, the e-news, opt-in right there, instead of having to go to our site.
Right. That's a great idea. Thank you so much for your question.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
You asked most of my questions. That's good.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, there you go. No, the other component, the one I was specifically like, was exactly that slide, Patsy.
Yes.
I would be very much interested, though, in seeing during that same 2-year time frame, what is the amount of money spent by visitors to those respective states, and then the corresponding the growth percentage next to it during that, just against ours. I get the number that you're saying, that the research shows us that for every dollar spent, it's, you know, it's XYZ, but it would be good to see it in hard numbers. Was the first thing when I saw that slide.
Yeah.
So that was my first question. The other one was in regards to, you were talking about, you know, distribution of flyers and stuff, and that you only do one of those a year as a trade.
Oh, the consumer travel trade shows. Yeah.
Right, because you can't show an ROI.
Right.
And I guess we haven't thought of a creative way to show an ROI on the flyers.
We are funded primarily out of the lodging tax.
Okay.
And our lodging partner and the county has increasingly required very specific ROI, meaning how many heads and beds did we book? And when you go to a consumer trade show and I'm handing out visitor guides or I'm handing out hiking guides, I can't say, well, they came 6 months later, they don't book through me, so they're going to go directly to that.
I guess that was where I was going, not leading question, sorry. There's no way, since it is coming from the lodging industry, that we, you know, Patsy was just talking about where you sign up for a newsletter or whatever, that, you know, hey, how did you hear about us or whatever, where you actually, but there's some sort of discount that's associated if you're using it from the flyer that you gave them. Oh, I heard about the trade show, and that would register in their database.
To some extent, that's possible. We have done little, you know, giveaways kind of thing to track in that regard. We had one of our partners, in fact, Amtrak, was providing a 2-for-1 coupon. So we were trying to track it through that, but people weren't using the train, and some people were just driving down because they wanted to shop and didn't want to carry their packages on the train. So, you know, we've tried some things in the past, but haven't found a really good way to track whether or not our time spent there to prove to our hotel partners that they're staying overnight when they come back down.
The only way they would know is if they were actually walking in with the flyer in their hand that says, I want my 15% off because I heard it at the show.
There is an opportunity to do some of that. Mostly that doesn't happen. The studies have shown visitors will go to over a dozen websites before they book a hotel room.
Sure.
Right, and so they're going to go to, as we all do, we go to Expedia, we go to hotel.com, we look on the corporate website, you know, what have you. And generally speaking, the discounts that they're going to be able to provide us in that kind of a coupon is not as deep a discount as they're going to be selling through Expedia or through their corporate programs. And so they don't want to be competing against themselves in those kinds of discount programs. So it's a struggle. But I appreciate your ideas. We might
try some new program next.
No, that makes that's a logical explanation. That anyone be the Expedias of the world or probably outdo any sort of enticement unless it was free breakfast or something like that only the hotel could offer. Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback.
I did have one last question. I forgot this one. You listed a bunch of events that you guys are present at. Are you guys at the fair? Do you have a booth and are at the fair?
We have been. Every year we go to different events.
Okay.
We used to go regularly to the fair, and what we found was that most of the questions we were fielding is where are the restrooms and what time does the next race start?
So not
very fair specific information as opposed to what else can I do while I'm in the county? No questions. So we go to a variety of different events and try to support different communities throughout the county with our limited staff, and so we're kind of all over.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I do have one more question. Probably not your area, but I'm going to take a chance anyway. We probably have the need for another hotel here in Monroe.
Yes.
We understand that with our former chamber director that there were times where we actually had to refer people to Bothell or to Everett because our hotels were fully booked, which is great. Mm-hmm. But in your interactions with hotel companies, I would encourage you to remember that we're here. We have great accessibility to the east side and to Everett, and Leavenworth is just a half-day trip for us. Drive over, brought beer, hike, and come back, and it's a really convenient place to stay. So if you're interacting with a hotel that's interested in locating somewhere, please remember us.
Yes, thank you. I actually did have a conversation with a local hotel development company, and they were really looking at that corridor. And I shared your interest and the need out here for them to make it pencil. That's where they were struggling a bit, so they were looking more at that corridor. But I am aware.
We have access, and we do have access to the I-5 corridor down 522 and Highway 2.
Right.
And like I said, easy access to the mountains. So 203 will take you down 990 also, and you don't need to pay a toll on 405. So
that's right.
We've got a lot going for us here. I appreciate all the work that you do, Ms. Spain and Ms. Dunn. You bring a lot of events, both of you, to our community, and we greatly appreciate it. So thank you both for all your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Are there any members of the public that would like to come forward to speak this evening? Ms. Hendrickson?
No.
Okay. All right, seeing nobody, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Council? Councilmember Cutterback?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Wow.
I've got some coffee in my office.
I've got to find the mic here.
Ben.
All right. We have a first from Councilmember Cutterback to approve the consent agenda and a second from Councilmember Scarborough. Any discussion on the motion? All right. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now move on to unfinished business item number one. This is AB 16059, discussion strategic final plan, strategic financial planning, and this is a continuation. Ms. Nelson.
Good evening. this is a continuation, hopefully one of our last times that we're discussing this for the time being. Basically, we're looking at sort of a consensus or direction from council on any priorities and funding mechanisms recommended for our 2017 budget. Staff is going to start working on the budget in July, late June. The mayor sends out a directive to staff in the process, telling them, you know, what the focus is and where they should be allocating resources. And then, as you know, come fall, the mayor will present to you a preliminary budget. We are, as you know from our talking of priorities and expenditures, the need is great, the revenue to what we need. And so we've had a number of different things happen. We haven't raised the property taxes. We were in a recession. Now we are now growing, and there's this huge demand for services, and we can't quite deliver at the level that the community would like us to, or that we would like to. And so we're trying to find ways to deliver services at a high level that people expect in the city of Monroe. And so in your packet is a list of priorities. The Finance Committee has gone through them. The council as a whole has gone through them. Staff and the mayor have gone through them. The worksheet lists the Finance Committee's recommendation. It also lists the mayor's staff recommendation. And basically, I'm hoping you guys will discuss and hopefully come to some consensus of whether your willingness to support a budget that would use bank capacity of property tax, and if so, what would your main priorities be for that? The reason we are looking for some type of direction from council is because this is a radical change from the past, when we were in the recession, where we were laying off staff, we were cutting back, and also we are now trying to look forward rather than pull back. And so in order to do that, we would hate to put the mayor in a position where he brings forward a budget that is totally unsupported by all of you, and then we have to start all over again with a whole new process again. So we're basically trying to get a feel from council, and I think I'm done rambling.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, so I very much enjoyed this process that we've gone down. I thank the mayor and the staff for, you know, it's been great to kind of approach it from a, hey, let's put all, you know, everything out there that we think it's important, you know, across the board, knowing full well that we don't have the total money, you know, available to do it. But, you know, lots of discussion. Everybody was able to express their opinion on what was important personally to them, both from a staff perspective and from a council perspective. And then, you know, what we tried to do in the Finance HR Committee is to take all that into consideration and then really kind of funnel it into trying to please all, but putting the focus to where most everybody's was a consensus, a majority of the dollars anyway, on some of that deferred maintenance around roads, maintenance, you know, and construction. But you'll see the recommendation that's before you out of the HR Finance Committee. We did try to, it is very much positioned in a way that it gives staff and the mayor the ability, the flexibility to spend, like instead of specific projects, you've got backlog transportation infrastructure maintenance and improvements at $485 a year, right? So that doesn't preclude them from being able to spend it on ADA or whatever the list of projects that we had, as opposed to if we just allocated the money for a specific project, if something came up, they wouldn't be able to do it without coming back, that sort of thing. So we really tried to take that into consideration. The finance operations piece, you could see the parks operations, so that the staff could use that appropriately towards position or whatever they saw fit. I think that it's a good recommendation. It's a very fiscally responsible recommendation. You know, as Diane said, it is a departure from what this council has done previously, as opposed to not raising, you know, the property taxes in any way, shape, or form. I'm, you know, been proud of our record in that regard over the last several years due to the recession across the board. We're kind of the last holdout amongst all of our sister cities. I think we can pat ourselves on the back. We've done a very good job in that regard, and now it's our responsibility to move forward and make sure that we are providing the services and the service levels that our citizens expect. I think it's extremely fiscally conservative and responsible to only use, you know, the amount of the bank capacity that we you know, all of us had talked about that we kind of had the stomach for at the 1.6. So that's what's before you is, you know, kind of the breakdown you can see on the spreadsheet, but it's allocated under those big buckets: transportation, finance operations, parks operations, admin operations. So it gives us the flexibility, or the staff and the mayor the flexibility to allocate as they see fit, as the problem, as those opportunities come before. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
I didn't know I pushed my button.
You did.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Council, anybody else? Questions? Comments? Councilmember Cutterback.
So I apologize. I missed the last HR Finance Committee meeting. Just a couple of questions, Diane. So the 798,546, that's with pretty much a tax rate at 1.60. Is that the additional amount? If you look at the spreadsheet.
Yes.
Okay, so that's if we do that tax rate of 1.59.
Correct.
Under the mayor staff priority, the average increase was 64.97. What would that additional tax be if we went that direction? Do you know? You
don't
know.
The total dollar levy?
Yeah.
It'd probably be about half of that, so it'd probably be about $500,000,
$400,000. Okay. And remind me, the mayor staff priority, that blue box, was that what staff were recommending versus the yellow box here with the HR committee? Or
that's what the mayor staff brought to the committee meeting.
Right.
The last committee meeting. We said this is because we thought rather than. We thought we'd at least say where we thought we, just for you to have something to consider, where we felt it should be.
At least considered that
at
much?
At least considered, yeah.
Okay.
And, but the discussion in the Finance Committee, it was felt that transportation was a much higher priority.
Yeah.
They wanted to allocate more towards transportation.
Well, because if I look at the blue box, and what we would raise in additional revenue for a year, we have to cut out the transportation piece pretty much. Or cut out the staff piece, one or the other.
Well, it would go from, maybe I'm not understanding you, but
well, if it's almost 800
to 50,000 a year.
Oh, okay. So
that's
you'd cut it down to 50 instead.
Yes.
Of completely zero, but 50 doesn't do much. Right.
It does 50,000 more than what we're doing now.
Right. Okay. And I agree with the comments that Councilmember Gamble made. I've sat up here for 6 years. You've been up here
four.
And
five.
You know, one thing I have been proud of is that every year it's come up, and that because of the recession and how people are struggling and the home values really decreasing. That I think we were of one mind saying we're not going to add a burden, even if it was very small increase. We didn't want to do that to the property owners. It just didn't feel right. I think we're at a point now with home values increasing, getting back up to certain levels, and the need and the growth happening, that we've got to do something. And not doing something really isn't an option for, I guess, for me as a council member representing this community anymore. So I'm in agreement with what council member said about the Finance HR Committee recommendation.
Thank you. Any other council members? Questions, comments? Council member Davis?
As a taxpayer here in the city, I've been been right there with you in not raising the property taxes. So I'm looking at this time now and I'm going, okay, yes, values, housing values have gone up, but I don't necessarily agree that the value may have gone up, but that doesn't equate to incomes or expendable income in the homes in the city going up commensurate to that. The last thing I want to do is get a tax increase as a homeowner. Because I'm thinking, okay, if the city of Monroe is going to increase my tax $112 a year, and then we add, what's the Snohomish County going to add for this year, you know? What if my house does increase in value, which it has, that's on top of an increase, that's going to increase it again, just by the nature of the value increasing. So increase, increase, increase. What is the state of Washington going to do at the same time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on and on and on, I guess. And so I'm looking at this as, well, if we were in some sort of a windfall type of situation where everybody's income was going up faster than tax rates, et cetera, et cetera, then I can see the justification there. But it's actually the opposite. Our home value is going up, but I don't know about you guys, but my pay increase there hasn't been increased a bit. And as a matter of fact, I'm still recovering from a considerable loss over the last 5 years. So I'm reticent to move into that. The idea of increasing the tax, I understand that we banked it. I understand we have the ability to go ahead and do that and all, but I still think that the same reason that we haven't increased taxes in the past, that same situation is in existence and probably will be for at least another year. I haven't really seen that. I haven't seen that personal effect at the level of the taxpayers that we may be seeing. And I, again, also, you know, I've heard people say that the economy is back, but then again, on the other hand, it's not really. So, you know, I guess the recession hasn't been declared officially over. If it was, what does that mean? You know, until I start seeing the physical result of that myself, I don't believe it. So, so that's how I'm looking at this. And I understand the need. We definitely have a need. We've had a need for years, and you want to deal with that. You also have to realize that you can't spend money that you really don't have, and so if we push that onto the taxpayer, I mean, do they really have that money? I'm not quite ready to announce that or to declare that. So I'm not ready to go with the property tax increase.
Thank you.
My thoughts.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Appreciate everything you said. Yeah, that's exactly, you know, where I've been for, you know, a big piece. I think that the tough part we talk about this is that there is always going to be in a certain part of the population that it's never going to be a good time. And I think that that's truly, you know, the struggle is, you know, when is the right time? And, you know, just the more that I look at, you know, all this stuff, you have property tax, you have sales tax. I mean, there's very limited revenue streams for the city to run the business. So there's only a couple ways that you can drive funds, and then there's also expense control and expense management, which, you know, I think we've done a pretty dang good job. The addition, I think, you know, doing what we're proposing, which on the, you know, your average house, you're raising taxes by $10 a month. Very cognizant that's, in my opinion, is responsible. It is something that we haven't done. I want to say, was it 6 years, Diane? 7 years? And you know, the reality, the fact that, you know, all those things that we talk about within our own budgets of you know, increasing, you know, for us is also an increase for the city and for us to be able to operate as a city. And we, as stewards of this, you know, the city's business as well, we do at some point in time have to make those type of decisions where eventually you're not you know, there is going to be a portion that $10 a month is going to be huge for certain folks, but I think it is the right thing to do. It's fiscally conservative and responsible, and I think we've put a lot of effort into it, and I feel really strong that this is the right thing to do, and I'm about as fiscally as conservative as you can get. But anyway, I appreciate your opinion very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I guess I need a refresher on a little Excel 101 here. So the Finance HR Committee has requested a higher tax rate than the mayor's staff. That's the reason why.
Can I directly answer? Actually, all the Finance Committee did is take action based off what the total council gave direction to, which was to put together a recommendation based off the bank capacity. We can go back and look at the minutes.
Okay. Just,
yeah. So the increase, that's what I'm trying to say, is that what we are bringing back is what the total council in consensus said, hey, yes, come back, here's our list of priorities.
Right.
Nobody had the stomach to go over 1.6, which I agree with that. I come back with a recommendation based on that, and that's what you're getting back, is based off of council direction.
And the mayor's staff priority takes into account the four positions?
Yes.
So that money's to be used for funding for that. Let me see, four asterisks on. I'm three positions on transportation backlog.
Oh, okay. Yeah, correct.
So any reduction in.
Just a second, Councilmember Camp, I think you're correct. Four. There's
did I miss one?
Was the code enforcement one pulled out? Because on this.
Code enforcement is set. Oh, okay. So you're doing.
Yeah, so there are three up top and then one down at the bottom. I just want to make certain we're on the same page. So I'm counting accountant, deputy city clerk, park supervisor, and code enforcement /CD. Were those the four?
Yes.
Okay, so four. Yes. Sorry, go ahead.
So carving, and I know these are, like an accountant is a very high priority item for the city because I know what's coming up in the future. And when you do your planning for next year's budget, I assume that tax rate can be adjusted as if these priorities change. I guess I'm thinking out loud. I have to agree. We've been going on for a while, and I agree about the... I'd hate to see taxes go up for anybody. But we are in a position where there are specific needs that we have that we need to address. And I'm trusting that the administration has and council members have been looking at other options of funding those positions. So far, I haven't heard any. So I'm thinking maybe we really need to consider this. I think the only thing you could do, and we have our priority over transportation, so there's really nothing. There's nothing in there that we could reduce that would reduce that tax increase, right? We're pretty much go.
Yeah, I mean, you can reduce whatever you want and bring it below. And 1.6 is the highest that you can go with the bank capacity,
right?
Without seeking, you know, going to where, you know, on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And the direction that council gave to the committee was, yes, 1.6. Come back with a recommendation. The more that the committee looked at it, we were in agreement with the consensus because, I mean, really, when you start talking about those percentages, $9 or $10 a month as opposed to $8 a month or $7 a month. And then furthermore, the other thing to keep into consideration is that what we're proposing here at $485,000 a year, remember that what we need is in the millions a year. Brad? To catch up on.
It was 3.5.
3.5 million for the next how many years?
Ever?
Yeah. I mean,
for the next ever years.
We've had deferred maintenance. And look, I mean, it's whether it's in a city or if it's in, you know, if you're on a board at a church or wherever you're at, the deferred maintenance piece is the number one things to go because most big last thing you want to cut is the human capital, is that piece.
Mm-hmm.
This piece has been neglected for years and years and years. We have to put something on the books to start taking care of our infrastructure or we're going to be in bad shape. We already are in bad shape. We're in worse shape.
If I still have the floor. One more item is, from your discussions earlier, that the city is a service-based organization, and we do need to provide more services. I think the accountant position is really getting critical. Deputy city clerk, been without one for years. I guess I can't remember about the reason for the high priority for the park supervisor.
Mike, can you fill in the park supervisor, please?
Sure, certainly. We have not had a park supervisor for the last 5 years. That was a casualty of the recession. What a park supervisor brings is it addresses our parks maintenance operations delays, our level of service standards has been lowered, and also it's been hit by not having the supervisor has centered our development and supervision of staff. Now, during the past 5 years, or 4 years, I should say, we've had on board several experienced full-time maintenance workers. However, last year, 2014, we lost two of them, one left for another job, another one retired, and so we replaced those positions with new, inexperienced staff. And then we have a third person that's going to be retiring this summer. So we'll be losing a third experienced maintenance person. So the direction, the development, the new staff, this is something that this is what the park supervisor position provides. And we've been able to avoid, but this with the new staff, it makes it harder to avoid the issue of working out of class. The supervisor position and the full-time maintenance worker positions are represented positions for the city. So that's why this is such a dire need for our department, and where I rank this much higher than I would getting another full-time maintenance worker position, which is what we also need. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you want to go over the code enforcement one, also since you're hitting all the positions?
No, because I keep hearing from people downtown they want code enforcement. So I.
Perfect. You still got the floor, Councilmember Kim.
I know. Thank you. I think I support it. I think it'd be. We've done our due diligence on it, and it has been a while, and we do have some definite needs we need to take care of. And we'll watch the purse. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Couple questions. Park supervisor. Mike, you've been the park supervisor in lieu of having one?
I'm the department director, and so, like I mentioned, with the experienced staff not needing as much or to rely on, so again, walking down that fine line of making sure we're not working out of class, but there's so much more pressure now with that changeover. So right now you have a department director, myself, and then we have the full-time staff, and then we have the administrative assistant.
Okay, thank you. Code enforcement's $100,000 a year, and we had low on it, but now it's something we want. Mr. Camp, in your conversations with people downtown, are they as interested in more parking as they are as a code enforcement person?
It's usually on the same level of conversation.
Because I noticed we didn't do any of the parking issues and put them up there, and they have had a medium designator from us. So I wonder if we want to think about that. I'm reading what I'm reading here. Basically, what's in green is what we figured we could get for the increase to $1.59 a person. Correct?
Is that correct? Yeah. So, I think we all agree that everything's important that's on the spreadsheet. You know, that's a definite. I think what's on the what's in green, and you know, the mayor's staff priority was not completely in alignment with what council direction was when we went into to committee. And so what we tried to come up with was some flex. That's why we changed it and just saying items, you know, this, and this. That's what I was trying to explain at the beginning, to where it was more, we're going to give you X amount of money per out of this, that we would get out of this bank capacity that would go towards streets, you know, projects, all that type of stuff. Maybe it doesn't say parking. I mean, I imagine it could include parking potentially. And then you would give X amount towards admin, towards operations, so that they could make the decision on what position they felt was in need more from an operational perspective. Maybe they're dealing with it every day. So that was the intent, was to give them flexibility, because there is not, in my opinion, a total, the amount there is probably not enough to staff all positions that are wanted or needed.
And one other question. You show population at 17.6. Does that include the prison?
Yes.
What are they contributing in our tax base?
We get some state shared revenues. We get to count them for population on the state distribute. We get about $500,000 a year in state shared revenues. That includes grant and general fund grants. And a lot of state shared revenues, like the gas tax, are counted by population. So we get to count them for that.
What is in the prison population?
3,000, roughly.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So as we're looking at the mayor's staff priority and the committee priority, to me, I see, you know, clearly there are three positions that we're in alignment with. Quite frankly, I see that we're in alignment with the need to do capital improvements, particularly transportation, but also there are others. And so you just kind of have a range there. If you do 50,000, then you know, that gives you an idea of what that means for your the impact to the property tax up top. Or if you do the 485,000 per year, that gives you the number up top computes into that. The only other thing that is in there is the code enforcement position, and that's 100,000 total. So am I understanding from council that one of the things that I'm trying to gauge here is where council feels that they're willing to look at using the banked capacity? Am I understanding from council there's a consensus closer to the $1.59 number or closer to the $1.41 number?
$1.59. I mean, the difference is, yeah.
$400,000.
No, I'm talking, I get the difference there. I'm talking the difference to the taxpayer.
Right.
That's what I'm, that's what I'm looking. The difference to the city is huge as opposed to the difference to the, so yes, $1.59. Yes.
Okay, so if we were to break this down to the average monthly home, the average increase, the monthly average home increase, sorry, you're looking at 935 versus 541, and I'm hearing that the 935 is okay. Yes, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, my hope is that if we do this next year, that we then don't do it, you know, do a little bit, go with the 1.59 this year, not the 1.41, but not do it the next year, you know. Like, not do an additional or even look at that.
You mean the 1%? Or are you saying that if we do $1.41 for 2017, the concern being that the additional 19 cents, if I'm doing my math correctly on the fly, that...
I think in the taxpayer's perception, which I'm a taxpayer also, so I get that it's hard when you see every year increasing, even if it's a little bit each year, versus doing one increase one year and not doing an increase for a couple of years.
Okay.
As a person perceiving taxes going up, if every year my tax goes up every single year, that's what you're remembering, is that every year your taxes are going up.
Okay.
So that's why one of the reasons we need the money, that 800,000, there's plenty of areas, infrastructure, transportation that we need to spend it on. That's why I'm in favor of the 1.59 now for next year.
Okay. And is there a consensus then on the code enforcement position? Because the one of the things that could occur is if there's a consensus where there's a desire to have the code enforcement position that's 100,000, we could, one of the options would be to pull that 100,000 out of the 485. So that's, so
I would prefer to stick the way that we've presented it out of committee, which makes you guys decide from that perspective, because we can't fund all of them.
Understood.
So if you look at administrative operations, the code enforcement would fall under that, and so would the deputy city clerk, correct?
Yes.
So basically it would be your guys's, you would determine out of that budget, hey, do I want a code enforcement officer or do I want a deputy city clerk?
Okay.
That would be my preference.
Okay. Any other council members?
I was one that was saying the code enforcement should be looked at more seriously, because it's been my experience over the last few years as we put in new ordinances, or there's sign code and there's parking regulations. Everything we've heard from people is, great, you're doing this, but how are you going to enforce it? And that just kept coming up is, great, you're doing this, but who's going to enforce it? So why are we even doing it? So I think that's going to be a continual problem, and as we put some of these codes in place, they don't mean much unless there's enforcement. So while we're trying to make improvement with the code, the signage, the parking, if no one's enforcing it, improvement doesn't happen. And so I feel that is a position that is important as we're looking at making changes and drawing in more businesses downtown, in other areas also, but that is something that for me was an important piece of this.
Okay, thank you. Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp left chambers about 2 minutes ago at 8:15.
And let it be shown that when Councilmember Cutback was speaking.
Okay, Councilmember Scarborough. Thank you, Councilmember Cutback.
Was there any thought in the committee in reducing the transportation infrastructure, that block, and putting in one of the police officers, or is the option of the code enforcement person subject to them saying, I'd rather have a policeman?
We did reduce the block on the transportation side of things. That is a significant, if you look at the $500,000 that we're allocating there against the close to $4 million that we need a year, really it was getting, you start getting to a point where it's like, why do we even put it? Why is it there? If we're going to be serious about, you know, are we fixing this stuff? And then the other component is the ADA requirement. If we're getting audited or something, we got to show that we've got some stake in the game. That would be my 2 cents on that. And like I said, they're all important positions. They really are. And that, you know, the intent was to give the flexibility to staff based off of the money that is left from the increase to make those decisions as they see fit. That's really what it is. I mean, I appreciate Councilmember Kovac's comments on the code enforcement officer, and I think that they can make a great decision on that, because you can make an argument on any one of these. I could make an argument for the police officer. I could make an argument for code enforcement, you know, any one of them. But what better person to divide that money up than those that are running their departments and the mayor to help determine that, not us sitting up here at the dais. That would be my 2 cents on that.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough, you still have the floor?
Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. All right. Ms. Nelson, do you have any questions for me or for council in this setting?
Not on this matter. I really appreciate the attention and thought that council has put behind this, that these are big decisions. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your efforts. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you, Diane.
Thank you very much. And thanks for the magical spreadsheet there, Brad. We appreciate that.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is new business. Item number one, AB 16060, ordinance number 004-2016. This is the 2016 budget amendment presented to you for first reading. Ms. Nelson.
Okay, the first budget amendment of the year. I try to just do two a year, but if things come up during the year, you know, someone's waiting more. This is the first one. The big difference is the beginning fund balances. Exhibit C is the listing of the changes in those. And if you look, there's really nothing that's shocking. It's mainly incremental things in each fund that came in higher or lower. Like I say, when we're doing the budget in the summer, we're guessing what we think the beginning fund balance is going to be in January. And now that we know what it is, we want to adjust the budget to have it be closer to reality. And so the difference is, overall, citywide, we're increasing the beginning fund balance by $3.7 million. A lot of times in the capital project funds, it's because stuff did not, it's the timing of the construction project. So, you know, if you're way under it on expenditures, it's because the project didn't get done. It's going to be done the next year. So it's not like we suddenly have a lot more money. It's just mainly the timing of when it's going to be spent. Aside from the beginning fund balance changes, there are 11 other items that have come to light that we would like to adjust, and those are in Exhibit A. Item number one is our left one medical bill expense. Back in the 70s, for about a five-year period, state in their wisdom said that they would pay 100% of all left one members, retirees, medical bills for life. After 5 years into it, they realized what a mistake they had made and got rid of that legislation, but the cities are now all on the hook. Ben just recently went to a conference, and some of them have like 30 left ones still on their, but they're retired, but you know, we're paying. We have one who recently went into assisted living. That goes at $10,000 a month that we are on the hook for. So we have insurance on all these people, but we can't, a lot of the bills are just on us. And so because of this one particular person's circumstances, what we had budgeted is not going to cover it, so we need an additional $30,000 to cover our liability for that for this year. The item number two is $75,000 for the planning department, and you guys are aware of all the work David's department is doing and all the legalities that they're going through, and so I think you're familiar enough with that one. You know why all of those expenses are going up. Then there are increased building overtime and planning postage. Those are just because of more projects are coming in the door, which is a good thing because that does mean more revenue for the city, but it also means a bigger demand on services. So we need to increase the building overtime, the planning postage, and planning supplies by some smaller amounts. As you can see there, items 3, 4, and 5. Parks Department, it's pretty much a wash. It's both a revenue and expenditures to recognize on our books the grants that Mike got awarded. It shows the money coming in and the same amount coming out. So it increases our budget, but it doesn't give us more cash. Item 8 is an ending restricted fund balance increase for the police department by $6,500, and it just has to do with, as time goes by, we're always guessing what we think that restricted fund balance is going to be, and Debbie tweaked some of her numbers and felt like it would be more closer to what she thinks it's going to be at the end of the year if we increase that by $6,500, just to be safe, to make sure we don't spend money that we should not be spending. The narcotics fund, items 9 and 10, due to the effect of the beginning fund balance. On Exhibit C, you can see on those two funds, the Narcotic Fund and the North Kelsey Development Fund, their beginning fund balances came in a lot lower than what we estimated. And so in order to make the budget balance on those funds, we have to lower the expenditures as well. So we're just not going to spend as much money out of those funds, and it's not a big deal on either one of them. And the very last one is the water fund had to increase, and this is an accounting function only. It's not increasing money. We currently, our utility tax that we charge, we receipt it into our general fund when the utility customers pay their bill. And the state auditor's office says no, because it's a water utility tax, you have to put it in your water fund and show it as revenue there and then transfer it over to the general fund. You can't just put it straight in the general fund. So it's just an accounting thing. And so we have to show both a revenue and an expenditure of $392,000. That's the water utility tax. And it's just an accounting function. It's not increasing money or operations. And those are all the changes for the first budget amendment. And if you have any questions about any of them, I kind of went through them kind of fast. Please let me know.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
I'm going to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 004-2016, amending the budget for fiscal year 2016 to account for actual beginning fund balances and new revenues and expenditures, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Cutterback to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 004-2016. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, Councilmember. So in item two, the $75,000, that's the budget, that's amending the budget to that amount for the rest of the year?
No, it's increasing it by $75,000.
Okay, it's increasing it by $75,000. What does that total put it at, do you know?
90?
90.
Okay. I'm just looking at this. We've already spent over $51,000, and the majority of that cost has been East Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the first quarter. And so the budget that we currently have is $90,000 is what you're saying. And we've spent already $51,000. I mean, once this amendment passes.
Yes.
Okay. And I mean, I guess you might have to come back.
We'll
see. Okay.
Right, but you'll have $24,000 left in the appropriation, and these were the bills up until December. March 31st.
Yeah.
So this doesn't include the month of April.
Nothing.
Or anything thereafter, right?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Diane.
Yeah. If it looks like it's really going over, I'll be back.
You'll be back. Okay.
I'll be back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? There's a motion on the table to approve. Or to accept, rather, as first reading. Any other items? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 1-2-3-4-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Next item on the agenda is final action, number one. This is AB 16061, resolution number 007-2016, authorizing a pilot program for the deployment of body-worn cameras by the Monroe Police Department. Chief Quinzer.
Thank you. Under the guidance of House Bill 2362, the Monroe Police Department is proposing a pilot program to evaluate the use of body cameras for first responder patrol officers. Proposed resolution would authorize the use of body-worn cameras by Monroe Police Department officers. It is the intent of the department to pilot two body cameras for a six-month period, and if successful, would deploy additional in the future as the budget allows. The department believes the technology will promote transparency and accountability by permitting access to video and or sound recordings of interactions with law enforcement. The policy surrounding the use of body cameras is outlined in the House Bill 2362. Via the media press release, the public was invited to provide comments to the City Council on this matter and proposed resolution May 3rd and also on May 10th council meetings. I might add that we've had no comments. And I also will add that it's probably the silent majority speaking, and we've had no negative comments. We also advertised it on our website, and we've had no comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Gamble was first.
I'm sorry, Councilmember Gamble.
Oh, good. I was just going to make a motion and then just a comment. Move to approve resolution number 007-2016, authorizing a pilot program for the deployment of body-worn cameras by the Monroe Police Department, establishing a community involvement process to provide input regarding the development of operational policies governing the use of body-worn cameras, and requesting information regarding appropriate redaction policies and costs.
Second.
The motion has been moved to approve resolution 007-2016. It was seconded by Councilmember Cutaback. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Cutaback.
Well, actually,
I'm sorry.
Councilmember, just was going on. Chief, if I remember correctly, did you say that there is a high probability that this is going to be mandated in the future from the state?
I'll put it this way. Every day I get a memo from the International Chiefs of Police about there's at least one article about body cameras, and as late as today, the Department of Justice is putting out a catalog for police departments to compare different body cameras so that they can make an educated choice on which body camera they're going to get. So I would say I think it's coming.
Yeah, I like the approach that you're asking for here, and I think it's the right way to go considering the stuff that's currently with the state and what's probably going to come down the line and involving trying to involve the citizens as much as possible. Maybe we'll get somebody to reply. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutaback.
Chief, just a couple questions. The two body-worn cameras by officers, is that two, just a total of two for the whole department, or two?
Yes.
On? Okay.
Two officers will have the body cameras for the first 6 months.
Okay. Is it the same two officers who work kind of the same shift, or are you changing officers throughout the 6 months?
No, it will be the same two officers, and what we're doing as of Thursday, we have one company, well, we have two companies that are giving us cameras to test. We're having one camera on night shift and one camera on a day shift officer. It'll be those two officers we're going to be using for 6 months. And then they will switch after 15 days, and at the end of the 30-day trial period, they'll let us know which one they think is the best one for us to purchase. So.
Okay. And I want to make sure I understand the process. So this is a pilot for 6 months. We approve the resolution, and then do they start wearing them by that June date? And when do we have the policy in place? I read somewhere that 120 days after the effective date, the policy needs to be in place.
The police department policy has to be in place prior to utilizing the cameras.
Even in this pilot program?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure, is that we had a clear, in the House bill they have suggestions on what needs, not suggestions, but what needs to be in
yes.
the policy, but okay. We are going to come up with a policy even before they're out there wearing the camera.
We have.
We have to. I just want to make sure.
Everything has to be in place by June 9th.
Everything has to be in place by June 9th.
In order to fall under the mandates of this particular House bill.
Right, okay.
As far as disclosure.
And I'm in favor of obviously the pilot and gathering more information, seeing how it tests out, and I'm in favor of more transparency, and also I think it can help back up stories obviously when things happen. My only concern is obviously a privacy issue, but that's where the policy will come into play on how to handle certain circumstances or people per se. I did see something in here about the public disclosure, the Public Records Act, and it didn't sound like only people who were part of the event or the scene could ask for the record. That's not how I read it, so.
They can ask for it,
yeah.
But as far as getting it, They have to have some type of connection, or the department has to, if it's the media, the department has to, doesn't have to, but can disclose the video to the, without being forced to under the Public Disclosure Act.
Okay, so if say something happens in town and me, the average person, isn't connected with what happened but wants to ask for that video and come in and make a public records request, are you saying I couldn't do that because I wasn't involved in that event, or I could do it?
You could do it if you had the officer's name and you had the case number.
Okay.
And like. What this prevents,
okay,
is the anonymous person sending in a public disclosure request for every video,
okay,
that the city has. And this came as a result of what happened in Seattle, where the individual anonymously requested every video that the Seattle Police Department had. And his goal was then to get them and put them on YouTube and make money off it.
All right, I just want to make sure, because what I read that in here, it says a request for body camera recordings must specify a name, person involved in the incident,
yes,
provide the incident or case number, but they don't have to be personally connected to the incident. They just have to have information and be very specific in what they're asking,
right,
for. They can't make a blanket ask for all the video that you have. It has to be on this incident involving this person, but it doesn't have to be involving them.
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear on that. Okay, thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we have a motion on the floor to approve the resolution. Any more discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 4-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda we're coming into is council member reports. We'll go ahead and start off with the Legislative Affairs Committee.
Well, since Councilman Camp had to leave, I'll have to...
You're the acting chair.
I'm going to have to make this work, I guess. The discussions at the Affairs Committee are about the rules of the council and how we might amend some of them. We will have a discussion at a further date with everybody here to talk about that. The other is the discussion about the term limits on councilmen's terms, and we'll be discussing that more and bring more of that forward. So that was the two discussions, the two items that we discussed tonight, and we got pretty far down the track on the first one and not too far down on the second one, other than having some legal clarification given to us by Elizabeth, and we can probably report on that sooner than we think, but I don't want to do it tonight without Mr. Camp here.
Thank you. Community Transit Board, Councilmember Cutterback.
I was not able to attend last Thursday. You guys did have the board agenda in your packet, so you can take a look at that. There is a board of directors retreat on, I think, the 20th of May, and it's an all-day retreat. I will be attending that on a Friday, so I will be attending that. So,
thank
no
you.
Other update.
Thank you. Snohomish Health District, as I mentioned earlier, Councilmember Rasmussen is ill today. The board would have been earlier today, and he was not able to attend. The link is there, as Councilmember Cutterback mentioned for her item. So you can certainly take a look at that, and I think that's it. We'll go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Scarborough?
Nothing else to report.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
Just upcoming, we got the Snohomish County Cities meeting on Thursday. Is it next Thursday?
Yeah, it's next Thursday.
Next Thursday, that's right. You're going, I'm going to go. I just wanted to make sure we didn't...
Yeah, since you brought that up, if you, you still got the floor, but if you would be so kind to yield since you brought it up.
I will yield.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So two things. One, this coming Thursday is the 5th annual meeting and award celebration for Economic Alliance of Snohomish County. We have Councilmember Cutterback and Gamble who have been registered and RSVP'd. Is anybody else planning on attending?
No.
Okay. So nobody else is planning on attending. The other one, and this is next Thursday, Oh, I'm sorry. It says registered by the 13th. So this is next Thursday, May 19th. This is Snohomish County Cities. The speaker will be Sheriff Ty Trenary. He'll be talking on drug issues and enforcement in Snohomish County. And this is in Stanwood. We currently have Councilmember Gamble, Councilmember Cutaback, and Councilmember Scarborough. Is anybody else planning on attending?
No.
Okay. The due date for that is May 13th, so I think that Ms. Smoot has already sent off an email reminding council members.
Yes, I just sent out the reminder today and just asked people to respond to me. And also, I do need entree choices for those that would like to attend.
Okay.
You got mine, though, right?
I did get it.
Okay. Just making sure.
Okay, and so since there are three in attendance, we may need to notice this as a potential quorum. But anyway, so that's where the things are. So, Councilmember Gamble, you still have the floor.
All right. So yeah, those are upcoming events. Also on the 13th, this Friday, Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Yes.
Monroe Public Schools Foundation annual auction for those that are attending or not attending but would like, or you know, maybe you want to put your money behind somebody that's going to represent you to get one of the outstanding auction items that are there. All of the proceeds go to support Monroe youth scholarships for college, so it's a big night for our community from a scholarship drive perspective, if you want to look at it that way. And then the only other thing I was going to say, it was just a happy Mother's Day, Patsy Cutaback.
You guys missed the boat last week.
I just said it right here. I didn't miss. Just said it right here. It's closer to the date, actually, Tuesday to Sunday. I hope you had a good Mother's Day and they treated you well. No problem.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing, thank
Consider that from all of us.
Today I attended a Woman in Business Leadership event at the Everett Yacht Club, and Amy Jewell was there, and Mayor Gregerson from Mukilteo. So it was a nice event to see women around the county in leadership positions. Trying to look and see what else is going on. Friday I will not be at the auction because my son is in a play, and I am also going to a Lego Robotics Club at Buckmalby Elementary every Friday night, which is a great thing. And kudos to Mike Carroll and the Parks for putting the fencing back up at the dog park and really cleaning that up now that hopefully the flooding season is over. But it looks great. So thanks for your guys' work at that park. Sky River, lots of use there, lots of people out practicing ball, and just lots of people out in the park, so it's appreciated.
Thanks.
I think that's it. I look forward to seeing everybody at the events over the next couple next week or so.
Thank you. Let's go out to staff. Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. Skate park is progressing the project, so they are about complete with all their demo work, and now they're doing some forming the next couple weeks here, and probably concrete pours in a couple of weeks, so we'll be with them regularly. So it's coming along, it's on schedule. And just a couple of upcoming events going on, and the handy brochures that were mailed out late last week. So it starts Friday, the 13th through the 22nd. There's a play, the Sky Performing Arts, Sadie Flynn comes to Big Oak. And then also next week, the high school girls fast pitch, the district tournament is next week. And there will be games at Sky River Park next week on the 17th, 19th, and the 20th.
Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you. Ms. Nelson.
Question.
Oh, sorry. Councilmember Gamble.
So I did have a question for you, Mike. I was approached by one of the board members from Sky Valley Little League, and their question was around, at Sky River Park, there is the logo painted of Sky River Soccer Club. So obviously there's an interest from that organization now that that entity, what's that?
I did receive an email.
Oh, you did? Okay. I gave him your name, so I, but basically that there is an interest, and it makes sense that club is no longer associated with Sky River Park. They've moved out.
Or if we're not going to get, what's that? Well,
even
I viewed it more as a, you know, it would be in the, you know, potentially addition of, you know, the parks, you know,
yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
Reaching out.
So just a little background. You may notice on the wastewater treatment plant wall, there's a couple of gold sombrero outlines, and that's kind of what kind of started the volunteer group from the Sky River Soccer Club offered to do that. Got permission from the wastewater treatment facility. That's okay for soccer balls against that wall. And so it's a nice feature to add in the park where people can just kind of ad hoc, you know, practice kicks. What we used to have is we used to have problems where people would move the park's goals around, which is a dangerous activity to do. You know, unauthorized moving goals around, and then it's a kind of a maintenance nightmare when the goals are in different spots. So it was a good thing to do something like that. And they went ahead and put their logo on there next to it, and they thought, yeah, that's fine enough. So, and then that was probably about, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago, something like that. And fast forward a little bit, with the expansion of the wastewater treatment plant, the new section of the wall was painted green with the yellow line going across. And from a maintenance point of view, it was a good thing to do something like that, because with the plain gray unpainted wall, it becomes a graffiti target.
Sure.
So that's been a good thing. And so a long range plan is to eventually, you know, paint the rest of it, you know, with that. So I definitely will consider the request is to, you know, would it be okay for the Little League logo to go on the wall as well? So I just need a little bit of research on that, and so I'll be communicating with Little League. And,
cool. You know. I'm sure we can drum up an artist if you need one.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Oh, Councilmember Scarborough.
Mike, have you got any update on the wakeboard part?
No update.
Okay.
Good question.
Okay. Yeah, I know that staff is continuing to reach out to H3O to find out what their status is. We're still waiting for material to be brought back in to the city for review. Okay. Great. Ms. Nelson.
This Saturday is the City of Monroe cleanup event at the high school from 8 o'clock till 2 o'clock. I think last year it went to 3, but this year it's closing at 2. So clean up your garage, it's free. And that's all I got.
Thank you.
If you live in the city,
yes.
Mr. Osaki.
Just really quick, the residential development continues. We took in a subdivision application last week, about 90 lots, north city limits, just east of Chain Lake Road.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Feilberg.
We're going to go start ripping up more streets. Actually, not really ripping up the street, but work should be starting soon on the trail along Woods Creek Road, so that will be down to one lane for a while. Is it working there, since it's right off the edge of the road? Bernie's waiting for a signal. Hopefully it will come soon. And we're finishing up on the water line on West Columbia Street. Going to start on the water line on Ribmont. And then those holes will get paved before the end of the summer. And starting on the sidewalks on Main Street soon and on 179.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Cutterback.
Brad, with the Woods Creek, the sidewalk, how far up does it go?
To the trail that goes up the hill to the farm.
Okay, it goes to the trail, not to the sidewalk.
Right, it goes to the trail.
Okay,
right.
It goes to the trail.
Yeah.
And then the Rivmont paint, the water main, replacing the water main?
Yes.
Are we resurfacing up there too?
Basically, most of the road is going to go away and
okay.
Be rebuilt.
Rebuilt, okay.
Because actually it is a road project, but since we're digging up the road, we're replacing the water lines, so we don't have to come back in 2 years and replace the water line.
Okay. Yeah, the road needs it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Scarborough.
Time frame on Rivermont?
Soon.
Time frame on Turney Way?
Sooner than Rivermont.
Yeah.
The same contractor that is doing West Columbia was the successful bidder on Route Mile. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they finish that project up, they'll move over to Route Mile. And then Turning Way, we're just waiting for the signal controller cabinet to get installed, and then it should be open.
Okay, I've heard that this question has already been asked. Why can we not put a stop sign at the bottom of Turney Way and Woods Creek Road and Oak Street?
Yeah.
Why don't we?
Because since it is not an existing road that was open, we figured it would be too confusing for the general public if we started something and then changed it after 3 weeks.
Second question. I asked you once about putting parking lines on down here in downtown. You said it's Highway 203, and you couldn't do it?
On Highway 203?
Yeah, yes. Is that correct?
The permission from Washington State Department of Transportation.
Do we need their permission to do it?
Yes.
How about Hill Street?
I thought they were there. Come back after the.
I'm looking by the.
School?
No, well, the school and the cleaners, mm-hmm. and M&M Antiques, and the backside of Geno's. That's part of the street. And so, have we asked the state about putting the parking lines on 203?
No. It's also something that's not funded. Consider in the budget.
Well, give me a can of spray paint if you have permission. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. Anything further? All right, Chief.
Nothing from the police department this evening.
All right. My report's under the Monroe This Week hyperlink, so you can go ahead and take a look at that if you've got anything. And Chief, do you have anything else from the city in general? And then I'll go over the extended agenda.
You're going to do the agenda?
Yeah, okay. I can go ahead and do that. Unless you want to do that.
Yeah, no.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
No, Chief's got it.
He's been bad.
I didn't even. Didn't want to put you on the spot. All right, so the agenda for May 17th, 2016. You've got your usual things, call to order, roll call, Pledge of Allegiance, announcements and presentations. We'll have the Monroe Chamber of Commerce giving a quarterly report, comments from citizens. We then have on the consent agenda approval of the minutes, the checks and payments, the ordinance for the 2016 budget amendment for final reading, award and authorize the mayor to sign a contract for the West Main Street sidewalk project, and authorize the mayor to sign biosolids transport contract. Under unfinished business, we have a discussion on vaping device regulations. New business, we have a presentation on the 2016 building code update, an ordinance extending the downtown fee waiver program for first reading, presentation of the 2017 to 2022 transportation improvement plan, and then discussion on city council rules of procedure, proposed amendments. Ms. Smoot, do you think that they're going to be ready for that? Or go ahead.
Yes, the city attorney has already reviewed the majority of them.
Okay.
And so we're just had a couple of questions that we're touching on.
Okay.
But other than that, yes, they would be brought forward. And at this point, it was just for discussion, not necessarily for final action.
Okay. Sounds good. Then we have council member reports, including the P4 committee, staff and department reports, and you can read the rest of the agenda right there. Any additions or deletions for the agenda? Council member Cutterback.
I'd like to add, I think I need a second council member to agree to bring back the resolution on the East Monroe.
Second.
Okay, so we will go ahead and add the resolution for East Monroe. Is that the version that had been brought forward before, or did you want additional information placed on the resolution?
Well, we have the resolution that was brought before and discussion on that. Possible amendment, possible action.
Okay.
You have those, and it's not necessarily, I don't want to say it's final action, discussion, and does it have to be listed that there's possible action that might occur?
Okay, so we'll have it under new business then? This one?
Unfinished.
I would expect to be under unfinished business.
Yeah. Okay.
If you remember at the meeting a few weeks ago, that particular AB with that resolution, the motion was to defer to a later date, and so I would assume this is the later date that you are requesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. On the extended agenda. Please take a look at the extended agenda. If you've got anything that you'd like to have changed, please let me know. You will note absences. We do have Councilmember Hanford out today. All council members are showing as being here next week. Mm-hmm. And then Councilmember Scarborough on the 24th. What's that?
I will not be out those days now.
You will be here?
Correct.
Okay, so we will update this to show that on May 24th, you will be here. Councilmember Scarborough will be here on the 24th. And Councilmember Gamble?
I may be late on the 17th.
Okay. All right, any other changes on that? All right. I think that's it for the extended agenda. There's no other business from the city this evening. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Councilmember Scarborough has made a motion to adjourn, followed by a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening, and thank you for your service. We're adjourned.